With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science as we invite a new expert every week to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions. I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Dr. Michael Brooks.
So I think we probably need to have a little disclaimer on this episode because the language is going to be a little bit ripe.
Fruity,
little bit blue. Indoor language. Industrial language.
Yeah.
For a reason, we're going to be talking about swearing.
Yeah.
And it's hard to talk about swearing without, you know, doing a bit.
It's also no fun to talk about swearing without doing a bit.
Exactly.
And we're going to have fun today.
Yeah, we are, actually.
But your kids might, I don't know, maybe your, I think there might be a couple of words your kids haven't already heard. But don't kid yourself that they don't know them.
No, they'll know all of them.
You reckon?
Yeah.
All right, let's see. Are you allowed to swear on Five Live?
What the fuck do you think? No, of course not. I mean, there were eyebrows raised when I said, so there's two things I've been sort of, had my wrist slapped for, saying tool. As a sort of term of abuse. Yeah. About myself.
Oh, right.
I thought it was absolutely fine.
Yeah, I
and then
it was fine.
Did
you get complaints?
No,
of course not.
But one of the bosses sort of said, "Oh no, that's not. No, it doesn't. No, shouldn't really be saying that."
They never heard of Tool Academy.
Well, this was kind of my point. Like, come on, get with the program.
Yeah.
Granddad.
Yeah. But that was edgy Channel 4. So what can you do?
Yeah. Extremely edgy. And then I said crap the other day, and that. Which I think is so gentle. I think crap
you're not getting told off for that.
No, but it was a sort of, you know, you can just feel like a slight sort of intake of breath. Sort of like, ooh. Then the other day, actually, Rachel said pissed off. And I was like, yeah, I think that's fine.
I think that's fine as well.
I kind of, you know, I mean, we are on early in the morning and there is a sort of wide age range, but I don't think any of that is offensive. But then I'm not the person to judge.
Crap certainly isn't. I mean, you can buy who gives a crap toilet paper.
Yeah, and I do.
And I wipe my ass with it.
Yeah.
So,
it's good, that stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Or I assume it is. Sort of packaged nicely and sort of feels like it's
what
much
do you
more
care?
Eco.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, fine.
That it
comes
definitely
in
is.
Huge boxes.
Yeah, and if they want to send any boxes to the studio, let them, you know.
Yeah.
That's fine.
There has been a lot of swearing on telly.
Exactly, yeah.
Lately, that.
Yeah.
There's been a real glut of it.
Yeah. Holly Willoughby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christian Gould. Oh, he wasn't actually on the telly when he swore.
No, he wasn't.
Oh, my God. I mean, he was suspended for calling, what's his name, a
Steve
cunt.
Baker.
Steve Baker a cunt. But actually, I mean, he should just be applauded for that, surely.
Well, obviously, I can't comment on that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this is going to be fun.
Well,
Miriam Margolyes on Radio 4 Today program.
Yeah.
The nation applauds you. I mean, literally everyone was like, that is fantastic.
But also you don't book Miriam Margolyes and think that that isn't going to happen.
No, exactly. Yeah. And then there was Joe Biden, who said nobody fucks with a Biden on a hot mic.
See, that's good. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah,
I mean, the hot mic stuff, I think, is really harsh as well, because... I mean,
yeah,
Christ,
yeah.
If people are picking up stuff that I'm saying on an off mic.
Yeah, so, I mean...
It's carnage.
The few of them, I mean, there's two fucks and two cunts between them. It's not a huge amount. It's not a big problem. And
what did Holly Willoughby say?
I don't know, because I've only ever been able to find the bleeped version. So
okay.
I think she might have said fuck.
I can't imagine her saying cunt, Summer.
No.
That feels like taboo, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah. You kind of even... Although, to me, like, no. Like, I don't... Personally, I don't find any swearing at all offensive.
I would just find it surprising to hear Holly Willoughby use that word.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Really, it would be like a double take.
She just called Richard Arnold a cunt on this morning. Oh, don't be a cunt.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because you know everyone does it, and there's you have it in the workplace all the time. Yeah. Like you know the lab when I did my PhD. I mean,
you did a PhD.
Yeah,
we should talk about it. More.
Yeah, we should probably mention that. And you know, it's just normal language, and especially my supervisor. Every other word was fuck, and quite often cunt. But you don't find that, like, you know, scientists. I searched online for scientists swearing, and you just can't find it because they, you know, they have this sort of public image, and they're, you know, employees of universities, so they have to be erudite and upright. But actually, behind the scenes, they do. I mean, the only person I know of who's a scientist who's sort of sworn publicly is Richard Dawkins, and he was quoting the editor of New Scientist magazine, Alan Anderson, as he was then, and well, he still is now, actually.
Yeah.
But he is no longer the editor. And he said on a panel something like, "Oh, you know, what's the New Scientist ethos is? We find science interesting, and if you don't, you can fuck off."
Mm.
Which I think is great, really good line.
Yeah.
And Dawkins quoted that, but even that wasn't Dawkins' own sort of words, and I can't find any evidence of. I actually spent a long time searching online for scientists swearing, but I couldn't get anything.
Yeah, because it feeds into the square image
of
scientists, but it's also
responsible and respectable.
It's not true to life.
No, not at all.
It's part of the reason. It's a veneer.
It's part of the reason why
veneer.
People don't trust scientists, I think, because they don't see them just kicking off, calling each other cunts, like they do at conferences sometimes.
You'd love to see it, wouldn't
you? You really would.
Can you remember your very first swear word? Because I can. Or no, actually, can't remember my first swear word. I can remember the first time I swore in front of my parents.
Oh, can you? So what I remember is being 8 or less and being out with my mates in the park, and my brother was around as well, my older brother. And I must have sworn because he went in and told my parents that I'd sworn. And my stepdad made me wash my mouth out with soap and water.
Actually. Did he not realise it's just a phrase?
No, I mean, he's a cunt as well. So.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Exactly. It wasn't a phrase to him.
Not literal.
Literally.
Oh, behave yourself.
I know.
That's terrible.
But that actually, as we'll get to in this, reinforces swearing. So that once you realise that actually, you know, you can have this incredible effect on people where people are like, you must not do that. It just makes you swear more.
Of course, it's appealing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've my two sort of swearing... anecdotes from childhood are one when my mum and dad went to a parents' evening when I was about, I mean, young, I think I was sort of 8 or 9, and my mum ended up crying at the parents' evening because the teachers were saying I was swearing a lot, and my mum hates swearing, and she was so disappointed.
Have you ever heard her swear?
No,
I've never heard my mum swear either.
And there was that. That was awkward. And she didn't go to her parents' even for like 5 years after that. Couldn't bear the stress of it.
You brought shame on the family.
Yeah, well, I've definitely brought shame on her. And then when I was at home, I was watching the Formula One with my mum and dad. And I was, this is back in the day, I was an Alan, I don't know why, it's sort of quite unlike me. I was an Alan Prost fan rather than a Senna fan.
Classic.
Even though now looking back, Senna was clearly the more exciting sort of interest. Anyway, I like the professor. And something happened that I didn't like. And I sort of shouted at the TV at Senna, "Oh, you prick." but I genuinely didn't realise that prick was sort of quite, I mean, it's, you know, prick's mid table, isn't it? But I thought it was sort of like Wally. And my parents are very unhappy, and
that's the great thing, isn't it, with kids? They don't know what the rankings
are. No, you're trying to sort of figure it out. Yeah, so I thought I was absolutely safe with prick. I wasn't safe with prick. I had to sit, and it's very vividly, sit in the in the corner facing the wall.
It's old school punishment.
It's really, isn't it? I like that kind of thing. I respect it. Face the wall, and so, but in still in the same room, so I could hear the TV.
But you couldn't watch it.
I couldn't watch it.
Oh, that's so well thought out.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah,
respect my parents. Shit. Everyone does it, though, not always in front of grandma. Swearing is a part of all of our lives. It's a staple of TV and movies and conversations in pubs and workplaces. Maybe at home, too, if you're a cool parent. But it's also taboo. Celebrities can lose endorsements for swearing at the wrong moment. Politicians might be forced to apologise to the public or even resign for swearing. Some experts say that swearing is a useful form of human expression, and trying to control it is not only counterproductive, it might even be harmful. Others, however, warn that we might have made swearing too commonplace and that this might have dangerous and divisive consequences for society. That's why this week we're asking, is swearing good for you?
Bollocks.
Fuck, shit, cunt, twat, bollocks. It's enjoyable. It's a bit of fun.
And it makes me laugh every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I can't help myself.
There's nothing wrong with it.
No.
Or is there? We're going to find out.
Well, we're going to find out with the help of our expert, who's Dr. Emma Byrne.
Some shit for brains, is it? Actually, I need to not get too carried away.
Dr. Emma Byrne is a robot scientist. But when she's not developing intelligent systems, she writes about neuroscience. And her first popular science book was Swearing is Good for You.
Spoiler alert.
But, you know, we'll reserve judgment on that. And her most recent book, How to Build a Human, is all about what science knows about childhood. So I would say she swapped it around a bit there.
Yeah. But I like the sound of her. She sounds perfect.
Yeah. No, she is great. She is great.
Quite like to go back to the roots of it and sort of find out where it comes from.
Well, I'm largely bodily functions, as Dr. Emma told me.
In British English in particular, in fact, in a lot of the English-speaking words, we love things that are to do with bodily functions. So things like fuck and shit. We also like things that are to do with body parts, particularly the body parts that are involved in bodily functions. But it's not always been the case. Religious swearing was far more popular several years ago, certainly my grandparents' generation. And throughout history, we can see that what we love as swear words changes with the time. It changes essentially as society changes its taboos. As far as we can tell, we've always had swearing. I mean, it doesn't appear as much in the written record as other more formal language, but certainly if you look back through history in graffiti, there are things that refer to people's bodily functions, sexuality, their parentage, the kind of swearing that we'd recognise now. So certainly it's been popular as long as people have been scribbling rude messages on walls.
Your mother's a whore, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, scribbling on walls, I remember the time when it used to be that, you know, you would be in the toilets at school and the walls were just covered in all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Drawing as well.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It was sort of like, you know,
BJ's from Brooks here. Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah.
that kind of thing. And yeah, probably at the time I wouldn't have even known what a BJ was. So, you know,
like, yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Don't ask, don't get. Yeah.
It's funny what she said about religious swearing as well, because that has really sort of, I mean, it's just become very mainstream, hasn't it? I mean, we've already had one Christ on this thing and nobody even notices it.
No, it feels sort of very gentle. Now, I'm sure some people would, but in a minority, but would still find that quite offensive.
Oh, I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I sort of, you know, like Jesus Christ, or, yeah. Oh God.
But I won't say that in front of my in-laws, for instance.
Are they religious?
Yeah, yeah. And I think they would find it offensive.
Oh, grow up. basically. what about a very gentle, oh, sweet Jesus.
No.
That's nice.
No, I just would never do that.
But sweet Jesus is sort of, you know, complimentary.
I don't think it is really. Is,
oh, is it not?
Okay. No, no.
Okay.
I don't think. I mean, this is the thing. It's like our culture
sweet
is
baby Jesus.
Our culture has shifted away from like being religious. I mean, we're very secular basically now. Mm. So it's just a useful expletive, isn't it? A useful indicator of like I'm frustrated or annoyed or impressed or anything.
It's almost just like punctuation.
Yeah, it is.
for want of something better to say.
I feel quite bad about that though, because there are still people who hold those beliefs very dear.
I couldn't give a fuck about them. I genuinely couldn't.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. do all languages have swear words?
Yeah, basically, we haven't found a culture that doesn't have them. But the really interesting thing is that if animals could speak, they would swear too.
Yeah!
So this amazing, amazing piece of research basically stimulate the limbic system of a macaque. Right, mm-hmm. Which is the kind of really primal part of the brain.
Yeah.
And it produces these amazing sort of emotion-laden vocalizations. Mm. And you basically get like angry grunts and shrieks and stuff. And it's sort of the same vibe as profanity, like, you know, as our swearing. And so, and that's exactly the same sort of root as our, all of our profanity. So when you swear, you're basically getting involved with your ancient limbic system, which is the kind of emotional core, really primitive part of your brain.
It does feel primal, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's not like the same that's to do with all the rest of language. You know, construct language and I'm speaking, I'm using a completely different part of the brain. But when you're swearing, that kind of reaction or the kind of invocation of emotion, that comes from the limbic system. The amygdala's in there.
That's really interesting. And makes total sense because it does feel like that.
Yeah.
So people feel like a separate...
People who've had a stroke and can't speak can still swear because it's just like a separate channel. It's a good channel to keep open, I'd say, if you've had a stroke.
but I mean, if I've got a choice, I'm taking full speech over just being able to swear, I think. I'd take your point, it's better than nothing, but still.
So swearing peaks in our 20s. I mean, this is interesting because and one of the theories is that it kind of rides on our impulsivity because it's like that ancient brain circuit.
Yeah.
And we're much more impulsive and much less able to control impulses until actually our mid-20s, basically. So, and then obviously in adolescence as well, it's a kind of, you know, rebellion kind of, and it's also, you know, a response to those intense emotions. You know how when you're an adolescent, you feel everything so much more. So you know, you probably swear more because you're feeling more. You're more passionate about stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah, I'm dead inside.
Are you now?
Yeah. I'm still managing to swear, but maybe I'm running out of steam. It is. I suppose it's interesting culturally. Is everyone using the same sort of swear words? Is it all bodily functions and body part related,
So there's the big six in English. Do you know what they are? I mean,
the big six swear words?
Yeah, yeah.
Cunt?
Yeah.
Fuck?
Yeah.
Shit?
Yeah.
Bollocks for English?
Not in here.
Okay, well, dick or, you know, something.
Cock,
okay, fine. Yeah. Am I allowed motherfucker?
No, that's a bit more American.
Yes, okay. So hang on, okay, so... Oh, arsehole.
Ass.
What's my sixth then? Tits. Can't be tits. I feel like I've got them all.
Well, piss is the other one.
Oh, piss. Okay.
But that feels weak, doesn't it?
Weak piss.
So the Romans had the big ten.
Oh, what are they adding in?
So they've got cunt, fuck, cock, erect or circumcised cock, verpa. clitoris.
Let me just note some of these down.
Clitoris is on. Bugger.
Yeah.
And fellate.
Yeah, okay.
And finally, the word irumo, which means mouth rape. I mean, I feel like a child that we're laughing at this, really, but there you go.
So, hang on. How am I using irumo?
Carefully.
Well, I hope you get irumo'd. Is that what I'm saying?
Well, I guess so. Yeah.
Oh, it's quite violent.
It feels more violent than anything else.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. That's nasty.
Yeah.
Okay. And bugger is sort of.
Well, I mean, that's soft now, isn't it? I'd have thought you could probably get away with that on Five Live.
Maybe.
It's surely on the same level as piss. Pissed off.
I think it's a bit.
Bugger off.
I think it's a bit higher just because when you actually think about what bugger means, it is sort of worse.
Fine,
isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, it's not sort of worse. It is worse than pissing. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I suppose so.
But it's the thing is, it sounds, it has the sort of rhythm of some of those kind of, you know, gentle, bloody,
You know, oh, he's a funny bugger, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, sort of willy. Like, it's that kind of, like, it feels sort of a bit quaint.
Yeah.
But I don't think it is a quaint word.
Yeah.
Irumo certainly is not, not quaint in the slightest.
But I know you're going to use that in the next week now.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to try and, I mean, maybe I can crowbar that into Five Live. I know, and I know what it means.
Right, we'll all be listening. if you could speak a second language, you wouldn't like swearing in it. You get nothing from it. Like, you can know the words, and quite often, you know, when we learn languages, it's like the first thing we learn is, oh, you know, what's the French for shit? And actually, but using it as an expletive does you no good at all.
Okay, I think I disagree with that, because I know quite a few Spanish swear words.
You know quite a few
really
experts who've done research on this, do you?
Yeah, no, I've done it myself inadvertently. But I enjoy swearing in Spanish.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. So if I'm just going, puta madre. Like,
yeah, but that's
really...
you're basically imitating a footballer that you've seen do that.
Yeah, I kind of, hijo de puta, el coño mojado. El coño mojado is horrible, actually.
What's that?
That means, like, you wet cunt. So whenever, which means any time I see...
Something in me is already regretting this episode,
by
the way.
I know. in, you know, if you... this is odd, but true. So if I go to a Spanish-speaking country, when you see that someone's, like, been mopping the floor and they put out the little sign,
yeah,
and it will say, you know, whatever, el piso mojado, which just means wet floor. And every time I see that, I always think, el coño mojado, like a child.
Yes, like a child.
But I mean, I would argue I get quite a lot of pleasure from Spanish swearing.
Okay, but I think it's not the same pleasure as, like, when you need to swear because something's happened.
I think you
do it sort of like for comedy effect, which actually, funnily enough, is very useful, as we'll get to that later. Just one thing, Japanese aren't very good at swearing.
I sort of imagine that, yeah.
So they kind of mix. So they have these two sort of sort of modalities for the language, which is formal and informal.
Yeah.
And if you mix those up in a certain way so that you're being effectively informal when you should be formal towards somebody, that's deemed quite rude and sort of almost like swearing at them.
That's interesting, because I read some Japanese fiction. I like Japanese fiction.
Of course you do.
Obviously, I'm not reading it in the original Japanese, but there is some swearing in there. And I guess that the translator is trying to sort of... So they're probably not swear words originally, but the translator is trying to sort of generate the effect that the writer was attempting to achieve in the original language. Hmm.
Are they finding themselves using Roman or Spanish?
I mean, Roman, I think. So I take it, if the Romans were swearing, pretty much as soon as we started talking, we started swearing.
There must have been some kind of change in language that you could make that you know, people gradually...
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it started with insults, didn't it? And then turned into, you know, like...
That insults and kind of expressing pain, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the kind of the yelp.
Yeah.
So instead of a yelp, you've got a word to... Yeah. Like, you stub your tongue. Oh, fuck!
But interestingly, like... Words like fuck and cunt didn't have like such extreme connotations when everybody was sort of living without privacy. So you'd shit in public and you'd probably fuck in public and you'd have that sort of, you know, you didn't have privacy in the same way. If you're living in a house with, you know, everyone else, or sharing a bed with, you know, eight people or whatever, you know, so those words sort of were just sort of everyday life almost. So they've only taken on those sort of meanings for us.
Right.
As we've become a bit more sort of private about everything. But generally, like that thing about, you know, pain or some kind of thing, it basically does do something to our bodies. So we must have always sort of had that response. I mean, it basically sort of sets off the fight or flight response and gets your heart rate up.
Mm.
So, you know, if you're hitting yourself with a stone axe by accident, presumably, you know, you're doing something that reacts to that, and that actually sort of...
So I'm getting a kind of dopamine hit from it.
Yeah, you're getting kind of dopamine a bit. So it's a bit like, you know, what we said in our Halloween special, is that we do like seek out things like that, you know, things that will make us feel better. And we will talk later about, you know, the sort of effect that it has on pain. But it's really sort of, you know, you sort of think, you know, what's going on with our, actually in our brains when we're swearing? And it turns out that's actually quite interesting.
yes, there are definitely different parts of the brain that are involved in both understanding and also generating swearing. We know this because, for example, people who've had strokes that damage most of their language processing or language producing ability can still sometimes swear incredibly fluently. We also know from looking at brain scans that when people are swearing with some emotional content, so they're trying to withstand pain or they're recalling something frustrating, that there are more parts of the brain that are involved in things like emotion and in the regulation of things like social understanding of threats and relationships with each other that are involved in trying to essentially gauge the strength of the words that you're using. So it's a little bit like if you're using a screwdriver as a tool, you know, you're putting a screw in a wall. There's not much you can do in order to utterly wreck that. You know roughly how much force to apply, and it's a fairly stereotypical and straightforward movement. That's the way we are with most of our language, but swearing's more like a hammer. You have to be very careful about knowing how much force to apply, when to apply it, the breaking strain of what you're applying it to. That's much more like swearing. We have to know what our audience is likely to think about these swear words, how it's likely to affect them emotionally, how much of our own emotional state we want to be able to convey. So there's very complex social processing that goes on when we're swearing compared to if we're just remarking on something that's a lot more emotionally neutral.
So I remember when I first started learning how to swear properly is when I started secondary school, and I was desperate to fit in. And basically that meant that I had to learn how to swear and how to use those words. And I remember the struggle that I had of like having consciously sort of learn how to use those words and punctuate my speech with it. Like not doing that at home became really, really difficult. And that is a very conscious thing. So you have to sort of get that, the context of swearing right. And
you sort of, you put a, like a different filter on it, feels.
It's weird,
like,
yeah,
like to
yeah.
Me. So when, yeah, when I'm on the radio, I know that essentially I can't speak how I speak on this podcast, for example.
Yeah.
And then I speak slightly differently when I'm with my friends, and certainly very differently when I'm with like my mum, and then a bit differently when I'm with my dad because he doesn't mind a swear. Like it's kind of like you're constantly assessing the other person or the other audience's relationship with swearing, aren't
but
you?
But those same words come out like completely unbidden if you're in some, you know, highly charged emotional state, or if you like hurt yourself, like hit yourself with a hammer or something like that, going to pain. It's like there's no control over those, is there? As far as I'm aware, it's really a primal kind of thing. You might swallow it, but it still like wants to be
right,
there.
Right. I mean, it's not quite. It's not a reflex, is it? It's not quite that, but
it's not
it
quite,
feels something sort of close, like to a linguistic reflex.
Yeah, and it has a purpose. So there's been these sort of studies.
But what do people who don't swear? What do they do?
I have no idea.
Like you whack a hammer onto your thumb.
And you go, oh!
Ouch!
Yeah, I guess you say ouch.
It feels deeply unsatisfying.
So exactly. So it's not doing the job that swearing does for you.
No.
Because the studies have shown that actually it helps us get over pain. It like produces an actual reaction to pain.
I think I've read about this before. It's amazing. And as soon as I read it, I was like, this is the perfect justification. I was like, this is carte blanche now. And I do love an experiment. We'll get into that, as well as whether animals can swear. Of course I won't ask that. And we'll answer our question, is swearing good for us, after this quick break.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right, we're back. Where were we?
So the ice bucket experiment, mm-hmm. not the same as the Facebook ice bucket challenge, to which I also swore somebody was going to nominate me, and I said, fuck off.
Yeah.
No, I didn't do it. So you basically plunge your hand into a bucket of ice water.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts.
Yeah.
It's painful.
Mm-hmm.
If you swear, as the pain gets worse, you can tolerate it far, far longer. Something like, I think it's like 33% longer if you're swearing compared to people who aren't allowed to swear. And the other sort of weird thing about it is that if you allow people to say words that might sound like swear words, but they aren't, it doesn't make any difference at all. It's like not speaking.
So your brain is releasing some sort of natural painkillers then when you swear.
Yeah, so it's the dopamine sort of response. Basically, you get a sort of, you know, pleasure thing that offsets the pain that you're getting. And I watched a video. There's a video online of Emma Byrne, our expert, doing this experiment at the Royal Institution. I can't remember what the swear word is that she gets this woman to say, but it felt really transgressive.
Yeah.
Like you're in the big like lecture theatre where Michael Faraday did his demonstrations, and she's asking people to just like, you know, to swear their heads off.
Yeah, now get into the Faraday cage and then shout cunt.
So, I mean, also, if you can swear while you're doing push-ups, you can do more of them. But interestingly, only if you think swearing is funny.
Well, I'm going to improve my press-up PB. I mean,
this just sort of feels like this is not science, but apparently, you know, there's proper psychology studies you know, that show that if you have a relationship with swearing that's quite sort of casual and humour-based,
mm-hmm.
which I think you do.
I do, yeah.
Then if you just say fuck every time you do a press-up, you'll be able to do more of them.
I honestly can't wait to try this. That's great.
Get down and give me 100.
I'm not giving you 100. I'll tell you that for free.
So is it? It's just dopamine, basically.
Am I releasing dopamine every time that I swear then?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's very cool.
Not like if you just keep swearing, you know, once a second. Yeah,
there must be a sort of gradually kind of attenuating effect.
Yeah.
I imagine.
Yeah.
Like the first fuck feels better than like the
oh,
tenth.
Definitely. Yeah. But amazingly, so there's a thing called the fuck it effect, which basically says that you can sort of trigger the behavioral activation system, which is basically that sort of primitive part of your brain. You can trigger that just by just quietly saying fuck under your breath. And if you feel anxious or insecure or whatever else, that actually helps you overcome those feelings, because it just gives you a little boost.
It's like a drug.
It's marvelous.
It's like a great little drug. That
I don't know how people live without
tap.
It. How do people live without it?
So, but going back to the dopamine, that is primitive.
Yeah.
Other, well, certainly mammalian brains, presumably, you can see a similar effect in them.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we don't have a lot of data on this, obviously, because, you know, there's no language
to
work
with. Yeah.
No. So the only real sort of good one that I found was a thing called Project Washo, which was a chimp. Mm-hmm. Using sign language. Now, we, you know, obviously have reservations about chimps using sign language.
Yes.
In our episode on Can We Ever Talk to Animals?
Our first ever episode of Eureka.
It was. And we sort of found that there's, you know, gorillas maybe not quite as, they're not quite as proficient as we'd maybe like to think they are.
Yeah.
But, so there's this chimp called Washo.
I remember Washo from the, I think we spoke about him.
Yeah, so she was taught sign language. She was also potty trained. And almost immediately after being potty trained, she started to use the sign for dirty. Anything to do with shit was dirty, right? And then she also started to use that as an insult and as a kind of, just a kind of, throwaway comment into conversations. It's just like, just sort of liked the word, like something in her liked the using this word, and she basically, you know, started to effectively swear. So she called her potty dirty good. That was the name she came up with for it. Mm-hmm. So it was like, this is where I should shit.
Yeah, you know. Okay.
So that's all right. And then, but she also started to use dirty as an insult. So when they got like, when she and other chimpanzees, when they got upset, frustrated or anything, they would start to just throw that around. It's like, you know, like a curse. And when like the guy who was, you know, effectively, you know, fostered her, when he wouldn't let her out of her cage, she signed Dirty Roger at him. Roger was his name, right?
Good.
So, you know, it's sort of, you know, it's not quite mouth rate, but you know, it's
but getting if I start calling you Dirty Michael, I mean, you
get quite like it.
Yeah. So okay, hear me out here. This might be absolute bollocks, but is Tourette's in some way a sort of means of getting excessive dopamine? Is there something in that?
So there's a sort of people with Tourette's have a sort of hair trigger relationship with dopamine, and that you know, the brain is just sort of, I think, seeking dopamine hits, but also really sensitive to dopamine hits.
Right.
And so that sort of, that can explain why you get a small, and it's not all Tourette's patients at all, sufferers, but a small percentage of them, you know, have swearing as a tic. Mm. And this is something that actually Dr. Emma talked about.
So only about, depending on how the study is done, but only about 20 to 25% of people who have Tourette syndrome have coprolalia, that's the saying of swear words, or coprographia or coprapraxis, so the writing or gesturing of rude content. Those only occur in a minority of people with Tourette's, but because it's such a visible symptom and because it creates such an emotional response in people who experience it or who see it or hear it, it tends to be one of the more memorable ones, which is why I think it became such a stereotype view of Tourette syndrome. There's some really interesting studies, and particularly case studies, where individuals with Tourette have talked about how they experience the condition. And what seems to happen is that the brains of people with Tourette syndrome are exquisitely sensitive to dopamine. Now, we all get dopamine when we do something, you know, we take a risk or we try a new thing or we exercise a new skill and it pays off. We get this rewarding dopamine hit that allows us to strengthen those pathways in the brain that go, that worked really well, do that again. In people with Tourette syndrome, their brains are so sensitive to that dopamine hit that if anything coincidentally is rewarding at the same time that they've done a particular gesture, movement, or said a thing, the brain interprets that as when you do this thing, something good will happen, and that behavior becomes over-stereotyped. So there's a case study from one person in the book who talked about the fact that his tic was calling out the name of his previous girlfriend when he was being intimate with his current girlfriend. Because obviously that had become like this really strong stereotype pattern for him.
Or that's his excuse.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like maybe it isn't just swearing, is it? It's if you say something that is in some way transgressive,
exactly,
or risky,
yeah, yeah,
or might, or someone might perceive as being offensive.
Yeah,
you do get a little kind of. I think I get it. I get a little rush,
absolutely,
of excitement.
It's risk taking behavior,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
and we do that in conversations. We take a risk. You know, you don't necessarily know how somebody's going to react.
Yeah,
and I mean, even just down to,
it's nice, and I'm finding the line. I mean, I'm a big fan of just sort of investigating the exact position of the line.
And
it's
obviously
fantastic.
When you were at primary school, you didn't know where the line was.
No, and I think I've figured it out now, and I enjoy dancing around it.
Yeah,
sometimes,
yeah, that's
popping
fair
a foot over,
getting your wrist slapped, pulling it back.
Yeah,
it's fine.
And enjoying myself.
Yeah, trying it again. Yeah, living life on the edge.
So I think what I'm getting from this is that, basically, swearing is quite good for you.
It's not in any way bad that I can find. You know, apart from, you know, I wouldn't want to offend certain people.
But sort of socially, in some social settings, it will be bad. But overall,
in others, it's really
an individual
good
level,
yeah, yeah,
it's good almost always.
So for a start, there's social capital to swearing. So if you're the one in the group who's the one who's swearing and getting away with it, you kind of get kudos for it. So people swear in some groups basically to build up their you know, kind of their self-esteem and also esteem in the eyes of others as well. And it does sort of happen. So interestingly, the upper middle class swear significantly more than the lower middle class. So it's almost like you get to a level where you're like, I can get away with this. You know,
I mean, it's horrible cod psychology, but I think that if you're aspirational, so my mum, for example, working class, now lower middle class, I'd say,
yeah,
quite aspirational, and I think she would think that swearing was quite, I don't know if she'd actually say this, but I think she would think it was quite working class, and so she's,
yeah,
now above that.
So that's,
whereas
interesting,
then,
yeah,
when you progress further up, you're like, no, fuck it.
Yeah, yeah,
I
yeah.
Say what I like.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I hate the fact that we can refer to social classes, but actually the research does show that amongst working class people, swearing is much more common than amongst lower middle class people.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all.
But then, you know, as you get to upper middle class, you just get away with it. And it's a kind of, you know, nobody's going to have a go at me because, you know, I can do what I like, basically. And the other thing is at work, if you're in a certain kind of work environment, use of the word fuck in studies is basically associated with expressions of solidarity, and we all use it together, and it kind of eases tensions between workers and sort of bonds them together, especially people with different levels of power in the workplace. They actually sort of bond and it equalizes people. And
so there's some genuine social utility to it, though.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. There was a study done in New Zealand, basically explored factory workers exchanging fucks in their conversation. And it's
factory,
like,
workers.
Factory workers, very good. It's like this complex code of politeness, swearing at each other. It's like, it would be almost impolite not to do it, if you know what I mean, not to join in the whole thing. And it just creates a sort of mutual trust. It's like we all know where we are, and we're all comfortable with each other, effectively.
And also, once you've sort of established that framework that everyone is okay with this, then it's all fine, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, because nobody's offended by it.
There's I think it's North Walian, definitely somewhere in Wales. Sort of cunt is a term of, I don't know about endearment exactly, but you would definitely call you just casually call your mate a cunt, and it's absolutely not an insult.
So like in train spotting. Like Irvin Welsh uses it basically as another word for mate or bloke.
Yeah.
Some cunt was coming down the road.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not derogatory.
No, no, it's just some cunt
coming
down the road.
It's probably a bloke.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, also, I mean, interestingly, if you use a swear word in the right context and use it well, you command more attention. So people will pay attention to you. It's like people's brains, obviously, that kind of primitive part of the brain just switches on, and you're just like, oh, got to pay attention.
This is exciting.
Yeah, yeah. And then basically, you know, people remember what you say more if you pepper it with fucks, weirdly. I mean, you can't overdo it. as we know. But there's a sweet spot. And the other thing that people have measured is that if you're good at swearing, it's sort of a measure of verbal fluency. And actually, it's not a... You know, some people say, "Well, it's because you can't think of anything better to say."
That's actually not true at all.
You know, you've got a really good vocabulary. You'll swear more.
Yeah.
So it's big, and it is clever.
That thing of oh, you just can't think of anything else to say.
Yeah.
I think is the sort of refuge of people who are trying to stamp it out. It's quite a lame way that your parents would try and justify you not doing it.
Oh, use a more interesting adjective.
Yeah, no, fuck off. I'm good. I've got this. I'm expressing exactly how I feel. It's working.
I like those people who, when you hear, what was it? It's like you hear the word fuck and you know that a noun is coming. It's just like that kind of use. And then it just becomes the normal way that people speak in certain strata of society, I guess, certain regions. It's just like, it's not offensive. It's not problematic. It's just a mode of speech, basically.
Yeah. And it just feels really puritanical when
to try and stamp it out.
To try and stamp it out. Like, why? Like, what? I genuinely feel like, no, it's you that needs to grow up.
You need to start swearing.
You're telling me.
That'd be weird, wouldn't it, if your mum started swearing?
And now I would hate it. Yeah. I'd be really, really uncomfortable with it. I'm very happy that she doesn't swear. But in general, I think get over yourself.
Yeah.
And why do you feel that you occupy this kind of privileged position where people can't swear in front of you? Like, what's so special about you?
Yeah, yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah, why is it offensive? Because, I mean, it's just, you know, it's like, have you ever had sex? Okay. Do you shit every day? Well, you know, then what's the problem, really?
Yeah.
It's sort of, you know, that reaction where you're just horrified by it, you could never actually explain why you're horrified by it, apart from it wasn't how I was brought up.
Well, I guess actually that sort of comes back to the hierarchy thing, doesn't it? Because I would say that I can understand why someone would find the concept of mouth rape offensive.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, 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 okay.
If you're describing something that is
probably non-consensual.
Yeah, like basically...
Probably, not probably.
Taboo, sorry, yeah, definitely.
If it's mouth rape, it's not, it's not consensual.
Taboo stuff that we've said is not okay in society, that still has the power to shock and offend probably quite a lot of people.
Yeah. In the same way that if somebody said to me, you know, I hope your sister gets cancer... You know, that's offensive. That's a horrible thing to say.
Yeah.
And I've heard people say things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We see that kind of thing.
I hope you die. You know, I hope you die. You know, that feels really quite shocking to me.
Said that to my dad once and got the old sit in the corner and stare at the wall. Yeah, yeah. But, and that was a long one. I was staring at that wall for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
But
was that just last week?
But you're testing stuff out when you're a kid, aren't you?
Trying
to work out what the... what's acceptable, and that definitely wasn't, and I fully see that. And still, like, that's one of the few things I can remember in my life where I genuinely feel massively guilty.
Yeah.
Like, why would I have said that?
Yeah.
That's an awful thing.
I think it's worse than just saying fuck you.
It's so much worse. So obviously so much worse, but not swearing.
Yeah.
Just that is an offensive and sort of insulting, upsetting... It's a nasty. It's a really horrible thing to wish upon somebody, isn't it? Yeah, particularly when you don't really mean it.
Yeah.
Like, why say it then?
In the same way as, I guess, you know, in sort of, you know, going a few hundred years ago, people would not use the word damn because being damned was the worst thing that could possibly happen to you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's interesting.
I've just remembered when I first started working on Channel 4 on screen, I was given the, like, Channel 4's list. With the rankings of swear words.
Oh, have you still got it?
And I have still got it somewhere. I should have bought it in. And it's got, and the fascinating, I wanted to do a little documentary about it because I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
It had the sort of ranking positions over the last sort of 20 years. So 20 years ago, 10 years ago,
okay.
5 years ago,
yeah.
then the present day. And this would have been in the early 2000s. And it was really shocking because you've got motherfucker and cunt at the top. And the thing that was, I remember being staggered at the time, was where the racial epithets were. So they were like, I mean, 20 years ago, they were so low down. But even then, like some, like the worst racial words you can think of were lower down than, I think it was something like bugger. And I was just looking at it going, you're mad. Like that's not interesting,
right. Isn't it? Because I mean, that's exactly one of the problems that we've got now. According to Emma, at least, you know, she says, you know, one of the things that slightly worries her is this kind of, you know, have we overused other things to the point where those ones are going to rise up the rankings?
Oh, because the others have been softened.
Yeah. So the things that are left to us are things that we really don't want to get to.
Mm.
But let's see what she had to say.
One thing I'm really afraid of is the idea that things like fuck and shit lose their power, and the only words that still have the power are the ones that are slurs, because slurs are very different. Fuck and shit unite us as humans. We've all had a shit. We're all the result of a fuck, you know. It's like one way or another something universal to human experience. But the slurs are by their very nature othering, saying that, you know, you and I are different. And I would hate it if that was the only emotional vocabulary that we had left. So I really hope that the bodily functions, the things that we all have in common as shitting fucking humans, will stay available to us as a form of swearing, because I think it's the best kind we've got.
I love Emma. Emma's great. Yeah, she's right, because if you really wanted to upset someone now, well, you just wouldn't do it, would you? But
no.
there are
I hope we wouldn't
a raft of words that you know would do it.
Yeah.
But you just hope that people aren't going to start resorting to those, because the power of the other words to shock has diminished.
Those are really powerful words, and they make a difference. So I found this amazing piece of research, right, where there was basically people were told that they were going to go into a room and have a conversation with someone at the university. There were students who was gay, right? Mm-hmm. And they were going to talk about the conditions for homosexuals at the university. Mm-hmm. But half of them were kind of unconsciously prepped, or, you know, somehow it was slipped in. The word faggot was slipped in. And then, so they didn't overtly hear it, but it was there sort of in their unconscious as part of the preparation for this.
Right.
And when they went into the room, they were asked to, you know, just set out the chairs for you to have this conversation. And the ones that were prepped with the word faggot basically had the chairs 10 centimeters further apart than the ones who hadn't had that kind of slur. So that the power of that unconscious hearing of that word basically othered somebody who was gay from them, you know. So this, you know, it's an incredibly clever and subtle experiment, but it kind of shows you that these things matter.
Matter. Yeah. So what does that mean for the future of swearing then? Because there definitely is a sort of evolution going on, and so the language that we use now would have been deemed really unacceptable even like 50 years ago, probably.
Well, I think it's something to think about. I mean, for me, it sort of made me think, oh, are we actually overusing it? So now, you don't think twice about it. You hear it in films all the time. You know, it's just normal part of life, especially fuck, which when I was a kid, certainly I don't think you ever heard on TV.
No.
And now it's kind of normal and straightforward. And it never bothered me until I sort of thought about, like, where do we go next?
Because if you
think that the Romans had the same, like, 6 out of 10 of their words were the ones that we use now, that means that there's not a lot of scope for change, is there? But, you know, presumably, you know, you can't invent new bodily functions.
Or invent new swear words?
Or invent new swear words.
Well,
you can
like
put
it.
Them, some of them together, like
just
motherfucker.
Just a bit of compound stuff, like pussy-o, I quite like.
Yeah. But, I mean, it doesn't feel like it's
a nice word to say, but I'm never, you know, stubbing my toe and bellowing pussy-o. Well, maybe I can think about it.
Yeah, I think maybe move towards that.
Yeah.
But so as far as the future of swearing goes, that's actually sort of a little bit concerning in a sense. It's like I'd never really thought about the future of swearing, but now I sort of think, you know, if maybe it's fine, maybe we don't need to worry about it, and you know, if those words were good enough for the Romans and they're good enough for us, maybe we don't need to go anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah. But you just you don't want a situation where people are just taking refuge in slurs.
Yeah.
But slurs, it's not a one-to-one mapping anyway, is it?
Because no, I don't think it
just doesn't.
It's designed for a different purpose altogether.
Yeah, it's just for insulting someone else, really.
And it probably doesn't, I haven't got research on this, it probably doesn't do the same in the limbic system as just a good fuck.
I don't think it would.
So it's used for a different purpose. So a concern that we don't actually need to worry about too much.
Yeah, maybe they don't translate. I certainly hope not. Okay, so our conclusion, I think, is that swearing is good.
Yeah, and obviously I asked Dr. Emma that.
Swearing is definitely good for us. It stops so many physical fights. It allows us to express the otherwise unexpressible. It's the language that is left to us when other words fail us. So without swearing, we just wouldn't be as human as we are.
Yes, Emma.
She's good.
Yeah, she's really good.
Her lecture's really worth watching. Just Google Emma Byrne at the Royal Institution. It's so good.
I like the thought of a load of stiff old white guys shifting very uncomfortably in their seats as well. We actually got a bit of additional stuff from Emma because I realised that we hadn't asked her quite an important question, which is, what's your favourite swear word?
Oh, yeah.
I really love the portmanteau ones, things like cockwomble and spunk trumpet, fart badger. But I think actually my favourite swear words, the ones that give me the most joy, are the ones that are uttered by the children in our house. It's possibly going to sound a little outrageous, but when they correctly use a swear word to express their frustration or their dismay or in order to try to be funny, I know that they're carrying on that tradition of, you know, feeling bad at losing at a card game and writing a note to me saying that they are fucking annoyed. There's part of me that wants to point out that there is a C before the K in fucking, but there's also that feeling that, yeah, this flame of swearing, part of what makes us so human, has been passed on to the children in our family. And I'm okay with that.
You don't hear that attitude often enough.
It's so good, isn't it?
Delighted.
Play that to your mum. Your mum. I mean, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
Your mum's good. Your mum's solid. I mean, me and my friends use that still quite a lot. Things that I'm going to do to your mama.
It's got everything.
This is not swearing, but it's a sort of good example of transgression. The hardest I can ever remember my dad laughing was the setting is quite important, I think. We didn't used to sit at a table to eat dinner very often at all. We'd just sit, we'd have trays and we'd just sit and watch the telly.
Yeah.
That was the vibe. But my my nana was staying with us, and so we had eaten at the table. And so it was my dad, my mum, me. I would have been sort of like 9 or 10, something like that. And me and my dad loved Blackadder when I was growing up. Really loved it. Would watch it a lot. And out of nowhere, I've just sort of, I don't know why, I genuinely don't know why I've said it, but I've just quoted a bit of Blackadder. I just said, I'll do anything to anything, animal, vegetable or mineral. Which is a fantastic line. my dad he's absolutely pissing himself. My mum's obviously disgusted. My nana's disgusted. My dad then feel it. You know how that happens. Like, my dad has basically got like schoolboy hiccups.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He knows this is bad.
Yeah.
He knows this is his fault. It was amazing. So, it's, yeah, one of my favourite memories.
Transgression is everything.
Eureka is a Stack production presented by Dr. Michael Brooks and Rick Edwards. The production team is Temi Adebayo, Katie Baxter, Luke Moore and Charlie Morgan. Sound design by Katie Baxter.
Special thanks to today's expert, Dr. Emma fucking Byrne.
Please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to your podcast. It does make a massive difference. We also really love hearing from you guys. So if you have any burning questions you want us to answer, drop us an email at eureka@stack.london, or you can find us, as always, on Twitter at EurekaPod.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.